the Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
And this is the HOD Hour with Stan Clare. We can never say that too often. And in the studio with me, Taiwo Mlangeni, who's going to be driving the show, and we're going to be talking to Jonathan Pollan in Jerusalem about matters affecting Israel. So, Jonathan, good evening.
Hi, Stan. Hi. How are you?
Wonderful. And you? So, by way of introduction, the last time we were on a couple of months ago, we had an in-depth discussion about basically about Bibi Netanyahu, why the elections hadn't been in his favor, although he had been asked to form a government, and why, in fact, things were so difficult and they now couldn't form a government. But in the meantime, a lot of events have happened along the last couple of months, and the feedback from that last show were people wanted to know, quite a number were asking, Trump is trying to impose a deal on the Palestinians and Israel, and going back 20, 30, 40 years, it seems that presidents of the United States tend to want to do this as a target for making their time in office as a success. Why? What gives America the right to be? Has somebody asked them, or have they just imposed it upon us in Israel and upon the Palestinians to try and bring about a deal? What's the background to that?
Well, from an Israeli point of view, we are so dependent on America. And America supplies us with arms, with international backing. A lot of Israel's strength is American support. But I think also America has got involved in more wars in the last 100 years than any other country. It's, for a long time, it saw itself as the policeman of the world. And different presidents have had different reasons for wanting to bring about peace between Israel and the Palestinians. For economic reasons, to project American strength, in the old days it was to make sure the Arab countries stayed on their side because they needed oil. In 1973, I don't know how many people remember, you've got to be older to remember that, after the October War, Yom Kippur War, the Arab countries had a boycott. They didn't sell petrol to America, and that affected the West. So that became very important for America to keep both sides happy, and I think it will. I think it will change the world if there is a possibility of getting some kind of a deal here. In a situation where it seems intractable, where it seems there is no clear and obvious way how to make that a deal here. And something, I can't remember exactly how Bill Clinton said it, but Bill Clinton worked really hard to get a deal. And it looked between that time, Ehud Barak and Yasser Arafat, and there was endless negotiations, and he came up with the Clinton parameters, which wasn't a final deal, but it said within these parameters we can come to a deal. And when Arafat turned that deal, it angered him because that would have set him down as one of the great American presidents. And if you're a leader of a country, the ego, everyone has a huge ego. And the idea of being remembered for bringing about peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, it's one of the things that will keep their memory alive for a long time.
As opposed to the memory of Monica Lewinsky.
Exactly.
So exactly. Now we come, and a couple of weeks ago, or less than a week ago, Trump's son-in-law goes to Bahrain and he addresses the crowd, and he, some were invited, some arrived there without invitation. Yeah. So it seems that the interest was high, and he laid out basically an economic plan, but with very big ideas, but low on detail. So what is the detail? Is there detail? Is it something which is a win-win for everyone, or is this some sort of diktat that the Palestinians are going to have to agree to?
This conflict's gone on for 100 years. There's been endless suggestions from one state to two state to, you know, the idea that the Palestinians would kick us out, or we would kick them out. After the Camp David talks between when Begin, Carter, and Sadat, there was some kind of an agreement to give Palestinians autonomy. Nothing's worked. No one's found the magic formula to turn this intractable conflict into a peaceful solution where both sides are happy with what both sides are happy with the outcome. And it's hard to see that Trump or the people or his son-in-law or the other people working can have some magic idea that will make it work. How difficult the problem is when we celebrate Independence Day for Palestinians, it's what they call the Nakba Day, the day of disaster. How you can reconcile those two elements, I'm not sure. For Jews, this belongs to us because we've been here for 3,000 years. For Palestinians, they drive around and look at villages where Jews are now living and housing, and they say, we were living there, it belongs to us. So to reconcile that, it seems unbelievably hard. Even though I told you last time that, you know, my views are on the left, I used to go to, in Jerusalem, they had different groups where you could hear Palestinians talk, and these were moderate Palestinians who were looking for a solution, but I came away always in despair because I realized how big the gap was between moderate Palestinians and someone like me, that Palestinians have a sense of deep injustice, that so if they end up with just the West Bank, which is 22% of the area that Israel controls, we end up with 78%, they'll see it as an injustice. But from the Jewish point of view, there's a fear here. There's a fear, there's a sense of insecurity, and a growing on the right, who don't live in fear, who feel that, you know, God gave us this land and it's ours, and no matter what, we must just grab it and take it and all will be okay. So to reconcile all those different elements, I'm not sure what he has in mind. Also, Trump has made it very clear that he's very pro-Israel. The people, including his son-in-law, the ambassador the American ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, and other people involved, are also very right-wing. So it's hard to believe they're going to do something that will make Israel unhappy. On the other hand, what has changed here, Israel is a lot stronger in many ways than it was 20 years ago. The Palestinians are a lot weaker. A lot of the Arab countries, the Gulf states, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, they want ties with Israel. They fear Iran, and they actually seem to be, the leadership seems to be tired of the Palestinian problem. So maybe they'll come up with something that they can impose on the Palestinians. There was always the idea, can the Americans impose a solution? And many of the previous American negotiators said they weren't there to impose, they were there to facilitate on both sides. I don't know that he can come up with something different, but maybe he can come up with something that will at least ease the situation, you know, make it more manageable for both sides.
He's tried to sweeten the pot by banging in 50 billion. And that's not to be sneezed at, but where is that money coming from?
Yeah, that 50 billion was more hot air than actual commitment. Over the years on the Oslo agreements, there were endless commitments to the Palestinians that they were going to get money, and a lot of these commitments never went anywhere. People promise and never, and even then, how is he going to change Gaza with money? The Palestinians, leadership totally rejected the conference. I don't know. Maybe the Arab countries will pressure the Palestinians into coming to some, at least the Palestinians in the West Bank will come into some kind of arrangement. But you've got Iran on the other side who will press them to do the opposite.
But a large number of Arab countries seem to be moving away from the Palestinians. I don't say that they're moving necessarily towards some sort of an accord with Israel, but they certainly don't seem to be offering the same amount of support that one would see years ago. I mean, all right, there's still the Ayatollah, there's governments like the government of Venezuela, which, you know, where they came into the picture, and one wonders, you know, if England was, run by Jeremy Corbyn, maybe it would be a different situation. But the fact is that I think the shine has come off the Palestinian cause from the world, in a world's view. And I think maybe the fact that Trump and Jared Kushner are pushing an agenda here which will kind of isolate the Palestinians in a way, because they've, in the past, they've relied on the United Nations passing legislation, building up piles of paperwork, but nothing really tangible in the way of a solution. They've always gone to try and show up the Israelis as being bad, but in fact, they haven't taken positive steps towards a solution. Now maybe Trump is pushing this agenda to try and give them less options of walking away. Because if they do walk away, I think their cause gets less and less support.
I think in some ways what you're saying is right, but that certainly from governments, from the Arab governments, there seems to be less support. The Europeans are still fully behind them.
Fully behind the Palestinians.
Fully behind it. The European countries are our biggest trade partners, but they certainly fully behind a two-state solution. And if Trump puts pressure on the Palestinians, unless he brings the Europeans with, the Palestinians will get support both from Iran and from the Europeans. So I don't know. I don't know what magic he has. And I don't know how he can impose a deal that will be tough enough for the Palestinians that they'll be forced to accept it. It also is within Israel. There's a lot of people who, especially on the far right, who have an influence over Netanyahu, who don't want a deal. They don't want Trump to get involved in any way. That they are pressing an agenda of Israel gradually annexing the West Bank, imposing, we spoke about it last time, that the West Bank's divided into three areas.
Yes.
Area C, 62% of which is controlled by Israel. And they're pushing for legislation for Israel to annex that. If Trump comes up with some kind of I don't know what the details will be, where Israel maybe keeps a smaller amount of it, a lot of Israeli politicians will not support that deal either. It'll be hard to go against Trump. And if someone like Netanyahu is in power, or any other prime minister to the left of Netanyahu, that they will find it very difficult to refuse Trump. So it's interesting. But I'll go back to the point I don't think there's a magic solution. I think there has to be created situation that will might lead to a solution.
So the other night, CNN had David Friedman on as a guest, I guess. And he made a statement, loosely, said Israel has the right to retain some, but not likely all of the West Bank. And he was pressed on that subject, and he kind of tried to say he doesn't know the extent of that and what that really means, but he was insistent that, you know, Israel has rights over a lot of that land, and it seemed as if he was saying that the backing, you know, has the backing of the American government on that score. And in fact, Israel is moving ahead with developments all the time there.
It depends what percentage he's talking about. In the previous discussions, the Palestinians conceded that there were certain areas that Israel, there's a big Jewish population. It's unlikely they're going to ever move. If you go all around Jerusalem, a lot of the big suburbs, Gilo, Pisgat Zaev, French Hill, are on, for the Palestinians, occupied territory. It's tens of thousands of people living in those suburbs. They are an integral part of Jerusalem. It's hard to believe that will go back. You have other big, Male Adumim, Ariel, Gush Etzion, and that in previous, discussions, the Palestinians conceded that, there are certain areas that are not going to be, go back to them. And in return, they were going to get other land. So it was going to be land for land swap. What Friedman is actually talking about is not clear. Is he talking about 62% of the West Bank? To be honest, if Israel takes 62% of the West Bank, I think anyone who's listening, just go look at the map. Go look at the maps if Israel keeps that. And it's obvious there's no viable Palestinian state. It's, I don't want to use the swear word, the A word, which people use, but you can use, it looks like Bantustans. Will the world accept it? I don't know. You know, maybe the world changes. Will the Palestinians accept it and be happy with it? No. If the Palestinians aren't happy with the solution, are we going to get peace and quiet? Unlikely. Even if all the Arab world turns against the Palestinians and Israel annexes but leaves the Palestinians without citizenship, we're going to have an internal issue. We're going to have an internal issue of a few million people without full rights. Are they going to be happy? Are they going to allow us to live in peace?
So moving
any solution has to give something to both sides.
Yes. But it's not, it can't be only land. I mean, it's got to be a little bit more than that. You can't have land and no autonomy. You need to govern yourself. I mean, you can't be as it has been over all these years, just dependent on everything else. You must be able to govern yourself, to have sway over your people, but it doesn't seem as if that's doable.
At a minimum level, the Palestinians do have some, in the areas that they do control, they have police and they have judges and they have control of their education, but there's a level of autonomy.
Right.
But that it's a very limited and restricted in autonomy. In Gaza, they have a lot more control and a lot more autonomy, and they haven't done anything much for themselves. And also, unfortunately, it's had an effect on Israelis. Israelis see Gaza, and they say, well, if there's going to be a Palestinian state on the West Bank, what will prevent it from being like in Gaza?
Right. We're going to take a momentary break to pay the rent, and we'll be back. Stay with us.
Branding is what people say about you when you aren't in the room. To find out how High FM can work for your brand, call us on 010-140-4090.
Hey agent, listen up. I went with my mom to the Samsung Single Gift Shop, and they have this amazing toy shop. It's the best kept secret. They have the biggest range of our generation dolls and accessories. The whole range of Melissa and Doug, the play food and kitchen stuff, is awesome. They've got Lego, the top model range of books, and stickers, props, puzzles, games. And for your baby brothers and sisters, there's the gigantic brass dolls range. The Samsung Single Toy Shop, it'll be our secret. Ask the secret agent, Auntie Andy. The Samsung Single Toy Shop is located inside the Samsung Single Gift Shop, George Avenue, Sandringham.
The man who stops advertising to save money is the man who stops the clock to save time. To find out how High FM can work for your business, call us on 010-140-4090. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And we're back talking to Jonathan Pollan, resident of Jerusalem. Very well read. Very large understanding of the facts and the state of Israel in regard to history and also the modern times. And Jonathan, just a couple of questions that were asked after our last discussion. So I'm following on that trend. What is the relationship with Trump and Netanyahu? How influential is that in keeping Netanyahu in power?
There's an interesting, just before we started talking, I turned on the news, Channel 13, and I wanted to keep up to date in case something had happened in the last 10 minutes. And just by the way, you praised me and all the nice things you said about me. But I'm watching the channel, and there's the presenter and four experts, journalists and politicians. All four of them are arguing with one another about all these issues.
That's the nature of being an expert.
Sorry?
That's the nature of being an expert.
Yeah. Every one of them knows better than another, and they're all connected. They all know some politician. When someone else disagrees with him, they know the politician and they know their people. So I tell you, I don't know any politicians. I have no.
That's your disclaimer, and you're sticking to it.
But one of the things they did say is that no one seemed to disagree with it. The American government is heavily invested in Netanyahu and in the election. That they do everything from their point of view to try ensure he gets re-elected. And one of the things they mentioned, there are these big posters of Netanyahu with all various leaders, that is American influence. Is it direct influence from the American government? I'm not sure. Many of the political parties here at various times have hired Americans who are experts in elections and polls and strategy and tactic. But I wouldn't be surprised if he is playing his part. They seem to get on well. He seems to like Netanyahu. He's made no, I'm talking about Trump. Trump has made no effort to meet, Israeli opposition politicians. And, he's also heavily influenced by David Friedman, who is very right-wing, who definitely would want to see Netanyahu get elected and get elected, that he has a majority, that he's not dependent on, parties to the left, like blue and white.
But that seems to be slipping away a little bit.
It's an interesting thing because the whole election, I'm not that on Facebook or on social media, even though I work in the high-tech industry. And the whole election is very quiet. And I'm not sure if why it is. it's holidays now. It's August, so a lot of Israelis are away. We've just had elections, as people know, a few months ago, so there might be some sense of election fatigue. So maybe from the beginning of September, it will all ramp up. But definitely the blue and white, even though in the polls they're more or less holding their own with the Likud, you almost don't hear from them. The main election news had to do more with the smaller parties, the parties to the right and the parties to the left, which I don't know if you want to, if I should tell you about that.
Well, I wanted to really ask a little bit outside of that. Talked about Trump and his influence, but is there any influence coming from Russia?
There was talk that there was some influence in Israeli politics, and since Russia seems to have influenced or tried to play a part in American elections, in Italian elections, I haven't heard anything dramatic about that, and so you know maybe I haven't been paying attention enough, I'd be surprised if they weren't doing something, since it seems to be something they like to do and apparently seem to have gotten good at it.
Yes, so they are looking for influence in the Middle East anyway, because you know, obviously there's money, there's oil, there's all the rest of the things which are a big attraction to countries. But what little I hear about Russia, you don't hear. You know, it's very quiet. In fact, if you, over the last few months since we spoke, politics has really been quite low on people's minds. It doesn't seem to come forward. Of course, there's, you know, people allude to it, but it seems like even the cases against Netanyahu seem to have, taken a back seat somehow. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Part of it is because it's summer holidays. So people are away. A lot of journalists are away. I think people are tired. There's an election fatigue. So it's been very, very low key. There's also almost an assumption that we're going to go vote and the result will be the same. There's talk from a lot of that, a lot of people won't go out to vote.
Low turnout good for him?
By the election date, the last 2 weeks in September, it will pick up. People will return from holidays. I think it will be the last 2 weeks. There'll be a lot of news, a lot of action.
So I might be wrong. You talked about Europe, and it would seem to me, and from what I gather from people who are traveling to and from Israel quite regularly, that a lot of European Jews are looking towards Israel. And so when you say that the Europe is siding to some extent with the Palestinians or supporting them in some way, that would bear out that anti-Semitism may be part of that whole situation.
I'm not sure that European Jews are leaving Europe because the European countries are more supportive of the Palestinians than, say, the Americans are.
I'm saying it's a question of anti-Semitism rather. They wouldn't move because, I mean, different countries have different people in power, and that changes, and that also would change where they give support. And of course, economics comes into it in a big way. But I think that because of the anti-Semitism, I think it's important to people that Israel is there and, you know, exists and is strong and is a potential home.
You certainly hear a lot more French in Jerusalem, even Renana, which was very, the immigrants there were South African and American English speakers. There's a lot more French there. So there are, and interesting, it's not, it's, even a lot of young people also, young. So that's definitely changed. Hard to tell from other countries, because the numbers aren't really big enough.
Well, from certainly South Africa, there's certainly a steady stream of immigrants from South Africa going to Israel. Much more and it's picking up. I mean, people are leaving this country and going elsewhere as well. But a lot of people, we've had a couple of members of the Hebrew Order of David who've moved to Israel recently and they're Mad Aliyah, and they're looking towards Israel as their future home. From the Hebrew Order of David point of view, we have two lodges there, and they tend to carry on, and we visit there as part of the delegations that go to visit these lodges, and they're very much at home. And I think that members of the order who leave here and go to Israel will find friends and people in the order in the fraternity to be able to talk to and maybe help them in some way. I think that's a worldwide trend towards Israel. I'm sure that's good for Israel.
I think immigrants strengthen the country, but the right immigrants, who can come and contribute, I think can definitely strengthen the country. One of the things that you said, about the Hebrew Order, they've coming to live in Israel is not simple. It's not an easy process. The culture changes, the expectations that you have and the way people will behave. And it's important to have some kind of a support system. So I'm not a member of the HOD and never have been.
There's still time.
One of your support systems, I'd suggest to people use it. If you want to come to Israel and you're a little bit nervous, rather go to some area where you're going to have people who think like you, can help explain to you how to go through the processes of what to do and what not to do. And from what I hear, the Tel Fed is very good, which is the
very much so
Zionist Fed representative here. I don't have much experience of them. I've been here too long. But, and there are other English speaking organizations. My suggestion to people, you don't have to dive into Israeli society. Take small steps. It will make the transition for most people easier.
Yes, I would imagine. And I'm sure it's a very big culture shock. First of all, I think language might have been a barrier, but I think a lot of youngsters today have been through the schooling system here and have a working knowledge of Hebrew, and I think that might stand them in good stead.
It's an astonishing thing that I think I might have said it last time, that I work in a high tech company where everyone has to speak English, but if they ask people, do you want a lecture in English or Hebrew? People want it in Hebrew. They're more comfortable in the home language. It's also quite amazing how differently people behave when they speak English or when they speak Hebrew. So Israelis are much more natural in Hebrew, and they want to speak Hebrew. On the other hand, my Hebrew is reasonable after 35 years in Israel, but my accent is very, still very South African. So I get into a taxi and I open my mouth and the guy wants to speak to me in broken English and I'm answering in Hebrew. It takes him a while to realize, even though my accent is not particularly good, I'm actually speaking better Hebrew than his English. And then he starts to go back to Hebrew.
He doesn't know you're a Bura Yurt. Tell me a little bit, one other question that came up in discussion with people after the last show. The Arab vote, you touched on that last time. There's an Arab party and so on. Does it have a big influence in the outcome?
Potentially, it can have a massive influence. The Arab population is 20, and here we're talking about the citizens of Israel, yes, are 20% of the population. So it's not including Palestinians living in, for the most part, in Jerusalem, who are not citizens, like permanent residents of Israel, or Palestinians living in the West Bank, who are not residents and are not citizens.
So citizens have full rights. They can vote. Everything that is an Israeli can do.
Yeah. 20% of the Israeli population are Palestinian or Arab, whatever they want to call themselves. And they, if they voted according to the numbers, the Knesset is, it's 120. They'll get 24 seats. They'll get 24 seats, and that will swing the election. It will prevent a right wing government. It will block a right wing government. But they tend to vote in lower numbers than the Jews, and they've always voted in lower numbers. For all kinds of different reasons. Also last election, they voted in even lower numbers. You mentioned that there's one Arab party. There were actually few elections ago, there were three different Arab parties. They were like a lot of the Israeli parties. Some of them were coalitions of parties. And then two elections ago, they formed a joint list and they did reasonably well. And then in the last election, they went back to two parties, and the one party nearly didn't get into the Knesset. So this time they've joined again together, and their campaign, the advert is that they can make a difference. They can prevent Netanyahu from being prime minister. It's interesting to me that those who don't vote, okay, there are a lot of people who don't vote because they just don't give a damn. But those who are possibly anti-Israel or anti-Zionist, nevertheless, still don't exploit the opportunity. There are a lot of things that people do and how they behave that I don't understand, and that's something that doesn't make sense to me. It's true for Jerusalem also, even though most of the Arabs are not citizens, they have a right to vote in the municipal elections. And if they voted in the municipal elections, it would change the face of Jerusalem and have a big influence on Israeli national politics.
Would there not be a backlash from the Jewish Israelis, you know, if that started to happen? I mean, a stronger move towards, you know, trying to woo them.
There's an interesting thing that's happened in this election for the first time. I don't know if you know or heard, the Meretz is the most left-wing Zionist party.
Right.
And the last elections, they got four seats, and based on, they know where they got their votes from, one of those seats came from, Arab voters, which was a change. And Meretz was concerned about whether they would actually pass the election threshold in this coming up election. And they joined together with Ehud Barak, the previous prime minister. And Ehud Barak established his own party. So he joined with Meretz and Sthav Shafir, who was from the Labour Party. She tried to be leader of the Labour Party. She failed and she joined. So they joined together. And one of the first things he did, I don't know if people remember, but in 2000, when Ehud Barak was prime minister and the second intifada started, there was an outbreak of violence, quite extensive violence, demonstrating within the Arab community in Israel. And 13 Israeli Arabs, Israeli citizens, were shot dead. And Ehud Barak, he made an announcement, he apologized. He says, I was prime minister. I take full responsibility for that. And it should never happen in Israel that Israeli citizens are shot by Israeli security forces or by the police. And because he made that apology, the Arab members of Meretz accepted him and said, okay, Meretz will join together with him. And one of the first things they did, which is quite amazing, is he went out to, they said they went arranged him to go into the Arab communities to actually talk to Arab, to try influence them to vote. Now, in past elections, except a little bit for Meretz, most of the Israeli parties made, even if they had an Arab member who had an Arab on their list, made it very clear that they would not cooperate with the Arab parties. So there's been this reaching out. And the interesting thing, there was somewhere, I can't remember the details of it, that even the Likud saw the importance of trying to reach out to Arab voters. I read it somewhere. I didn't read enough to know if it was really true, if it's, but the idea that someone would even say that seemed absurd. In two elections ago, Netanyahu, during the day of the election, we thought he wasn't going to win, came out with a statement, an ugly statement, said the Arabs are being busted in voting in numbers. We are going to lose the government. Did it about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the Likud vote, and that's from the areas where the Likud is strong, increased dramatically afterwards. In the last election, the Likud party, Netanyahu's party, did something unbelievably anti-democratic, and they got away with it. They placed cameras. A political party placed cameras in Arab areas, and they came out and they said they did it very deliberately to reduce the vote in the Arab area.
Really?
So it will be an interesting, to see what does happen with the Arab vote.
When is the election?
It's the 17th.
Of September?
Yeah. 17th of
September. That's just before Rosh Hashanah.
Just before Rosh Hashanah. And then 2 weeks later, Netanyahu has, he's hearing. There's also a lot of talk within the Likud and on the right, at least from journalists, as I say, I'm not connected to anyone, that if we end up in the same situation where the right can't form a government and the left can't form a government and Lieberman is in the middle, and the only way to form a government will be to, if Netanyahu resigns, that there'll be a lot of pressure on him to go, even from within the Likud and with on the right-wing party. That's an interesting, just while I was, I mentioned that I was watching the news, and one of the commentators said that amongst politicians on the right, Netanyahu is not popular. And so another commentator said, well, why does he always get elected? Which is two different issues. It's that the people electing him are not necessarily the same politicians who want to get rid of him. Although within the Likud, any time anyone tried to go up against Netanyahu, he crushed them. So he made a lot of enemies who might want him to go, but are still scared of him.
So actually, when you look at the Israeli politics, people know precious little, or probably in the country they know, but around the world, lately they've known about Benny Gantz and so on, but on a very limited basis. These are names, but you'd be hard pressed to find people who know about these politicians, who understand where they're coming, even though their politics, just what they've seen. And so the fact that Benny Gantz was the head of the Israeli army, etc., the military, that kind of makes it okay. Whether his politics are right, left, or center, don't seem to come into it. That's what I'm talking from an external point of view. I'm sure internally it makes a big difference. You would expect that people would support, the military and the record of some of these politicians. And most of them have been through the army anyway. Okay, so having gone through all of that, you seem to be kind of on the verge of saying that Netanyahu will come in. Is that how you see it?
I'm actually not sure. The polls are showing, if you have a look at the polls, and they're doing something very different to what they did last time. If you have the summary of the polls, they always have normally a right wing block and a left wing block. So the way they're doing it now, parties that say they will support Netanyahu and parties that won't support Netanyahu. And in the middle is Avigdor Lieberman, who prevented him from forming a government last time and is insisting that there should be a government between Likud, Netanyahu's party, and Blue and White, Gantz's party, and that they should some kind of coalition without the Haredi parties. He turned out to be a surprise. From what they say, Netanyahu never believed that Avigdor Lieberman would prevent him from becoming prime minister. He thought that he was holding out till the end, at some point he would compromise. And it's actually worked out quite well for him, according to the polls. He's doubled his support, which is quite interesting. So he's, even if the polls turn out to be accurate and things can change dramatically till the day of the election, he will be the kingmaker. And there's even something to me which is quite surprising, that Ayelet Shaked, I don't know if people know who Ayelet Shaked was. She was the justice minister.
Yes.
She was a joint head of the Beit HaYehudi in previous elections, and then she stood with Bennett in the last election, and they failed to get into Knesset. She's now become the head of the right-wing religious party, which is pretty unusual. He has a secular woman who's the head of a party that is mainly made up of religious people.
What's the world coming to?
Most of it support religion. So there's talk that she's going to somehow try her party's strong enough and Lieberman's strong enough, somehow try to force Netanyahu out, which is a change from the previous election where all the parties on the right said they're going to support Netanyahu. I think Netanyahu's position is pretty weak. His only real hope, and again, I'm not a prophet, but it seems to me his only real hope is if the right-wing bloc, which is Likud, the right-wing party, and the two Haredi parties get more than 60. If they get more than 60, then his position is relatively secure. He then has to go in the hearing. If they decide to charge him, I think it will be a lot of politicians will be hard pressed to keep him in government.
Right.
But at the moment, the polls are showing that he doesn't have a 61 with Art Lieberman.
So, Jonathan, we're running out of time. It's always interesting. Watch the space. We'll bring you back when we get closer to the time and maybe afterwards and see if your predictions are true and if King Netanyahu is in power or if he's looking through the bars of his prison cell. Who knows?
I just hope no one's recording this.
Of course we're recording it. We're going to publish it and distribute it around the world on Monday morning. But thank you for your time. Thank you for being on.
I might change my mind but then about my prediction.
Yes, that's your prerogative. So thank you. And thank you for your time and your insights. And it's always interesting. Just a few things about the Hebrew Order of David right now. We have our annual Bringing Yontif of Joy project. We're asking people around the world to send us money, and we will buy product which we can pack and distribute to those less fortunate in the community, which is unfortunately a growing number of families and individuals who live in areas which are run down. Urban creep has pushed them out, or they're living in areas where they really can't support their families, and we try to make their lives a little better. It's through Johannesburg. We've even gone now and we're assisting in the Eastern Cape and in Cape Town. And we already have a generous public sending us money from around the world. And we're picking up pace now, and we hope we can really make this a bumper Rosh Hashanah for those people, and really something which they can enjoy along with the rest of us. Think about what you have on your table and give us something to assist people to put on their tables. It's something that needs to be done. Unfortunately, the community needs the help, and the Hebrew Order of David is there to provide that assistance, with your assistance, the general public. So it's coming to the end of the week. From tonight, we don't eat meat. And so enjoy your dinner, whatever it may be, but no meat and no wine. And tomorrow night, you can have meat and wine and Shabbos. But for the rest, it's the 9 days. And I wish you all good Shabbos and good night.